10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Lift off.
Welcome to the Alien Probe Podcast. It is Saturday, June 8th, 2024. I'm Doug, this is Matt, and joining a special guest today, Christopher Lorick, author of SESG Explorer. Looks like a pretty exciting book. Welcome, Chris. How are you doing? Christopher. I'm going to do Christopher, I insist.
Doing good.
You were a naval commander, right? I it doesn't feel right. Just call, hey, Chris, a naval commander. I just know. I was in the Army, by the way. That's why it doesn't seem respectful.
No, I understand.
Unless I was an admiral and you were under me. But anyway. What's happening today? And you're from Tennessee? Well,
I'm in Tennessee. It's my home of choice. Nice. I'm originally from Oklahoma.
Oh, no kidding. We were talking about home values. Is Oklahoma, you didn't want to go back home when you settled? Is it expensive in Oklahoma?
No, I don't think so.
Well, relative to other states, no. Yeah. But it kind of strange. I suffered allergies most of my life, and we bought a ranch, my wife and I, and we were going to retire in eastern Oklahoma till one summer. Just tossing hay, it knocked me flat on my back for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I was taking all sorts of allergy meds and all this. And I was home on leave, which happy that here I come home to help on the ranch with the head of cattle. I'm in the bed.
That's a great way to spend leave.
Yeah.
And when I got orders to U.S. Africa Command in Germany, she's asked me, is ranching your passion? And part of me wanted to say yes. And I could tell by that tone that it was probably the wrong answer. Yeah. So I said no. Let's sell the ranch. I want to go with you to Germany. Yeah. And I'm like, that's a good call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah. I'm really glad she did put it that way. And we offloaded the ranch and she came to Germany with me, which made 3+ years in Germany actually enjoyable.
Right.
Yeah. With the wife, I could enjoy things.
Yeah,
yeah. I get hay fever, not to that extent, thankfully, but I've had it really bad before. I know what you're saying; it's not pleasant.
Yeah. So with the dry heat, I mean, I love thunderstorms. I love tornadoes. They're
amazing.
Best way for me to fall asleep is with a massive thunderstorm. Right.
Well, I like thunderstorms. I don't know if I like tornadoes that way. Yeah. If I could sleep.
And he's talking thunderstorms. California doesn't have it.
Yeah. Nothing like that.
No, Washington State, people would get excited about a thunderstorm rolling in. I'm like, what? Where?
Yeah.
What? What's that?
Yep. Yeah.
It's a squall.
But no, I wouldn't mind going back to Oklahoma, but with the income tax situation and the environment not being that healthy for me, I'm like, yeah, we're going elsewhere.
You should be in you should be in real estate sales. I'm Zillow Tennessee right now.
I tell you, if the wife keeps talking about it, it's like, well, why don't you go ahead and pull the trigger and become an agent? You don't have to do it full time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves looking up properties and all that. You would love this.
Yep.
My son's a realtor. He's only been in a couple of years, so he's still, you know, working his way up. But California is hard. And their interest, like we talked about earlier, the interest rates aren't helping. You know,
no.
But he does even with that, they do, you know, he does okay. So, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it can be a good profitable field, but it is also a hustle. And if you're early in the game, as early in your life, like with any of these independent games, you're really hustling.
Right.
he's pretty good at that. You got kids, Christopher?
No. Decided not to have any children after I met the wife and found out what her children were like.
You know this is a worldwide podcast, right? The likelihood of her might hearing this good. Lately.
Oh, she knows right now. Right? Our kids are dogs. Yeah. They're out of control.
Yeah.
No, I love children, especially when they go to their parents.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not here.
He's just like Debbie.
Right.
My wife is like that, too. My wife doesn't have any kids. I've got three boys, but they're grown. But I think sometimes she says the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like they spend money like it's, you know, going out of style.
Mom used to accuse me of spending her money left and right. I don't know. <it was. laughs>
Yeah. So tell us about your Navy career. I'm always fascinated with the military.
Oh, wow.
You don't have to tell us every detail. That's okay.
Right.
Some things can be omitted. My brother was in the Navy. He was a chief. He was a master chief and retired and went to work for a DOD contractor.
Oh.
That I'm not allowed to talk about.
Yeah.
I was going to say, turn to the dark side, did he?
We won't be talking about that.
We're cutting this part out.
He won't tell me if there's any UFOs or aliens or anything. Have you ever seen a UFO, Christopher, in your travels across the world?
An unidentified flying object? I don't know, maybe, but you mean
a flying saucer or a...
Oh, no.
Something different.
I've seen things in the sky that I'm like, what is that?
You know.
But no, I've never had a encounter of the third or fourth kind.
You haven't signed any NDAs based on what you've had, any sightings of extraterrestrials?
No, I haven't had to do that.
Have you ever signed an NDA? You don't have to tell me what it was, but have you ever had to sign one of those?
Well, I've had to sign...
Probably.
Yeah.
Not NDAs. We don't call them NDAs. It's our security briefing.
Right.
And when we are read out, we have to sign that anything we dealt with that was classified, can't talk about for 25 years. So,
how long has it been since you've been in? I want to know all the details now.
Well, I retired March of 21.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
It's almost turned into interrogation, I think.
We're really in the early stage of that. But I've done shore commands. I was a requirements officer at the Navy Warfare Development Command. I was at 7th Fleet when 9/11 occurred.
Oh, wow.
A fun time. Out of Japan. We were stationed in Fusca, Japan. So I got to sail the Pacific Ocean as a staff officer. That was fun. Been assigned to the U.S. Marine Corps twice. Once in the 90s, where I was assigned to the 15th Marine Expeditionary Unit, went to Kuwait. The ambassador to Kuwait, U.S. ambassador to Kuwait, became highly concerned when Saddam Hussein started rallying a sword. So we spent several months of our cruise in the Persian Gulf. That was not exciting.
Boating.
Just floating.
Just boating.
Yeah. Right. We were at sea so long, we got our beer day.
Navy,
you don't get to drink on the ship unless you've been at sea without protocol for 45 straight days.
Oh, wow.
We got our beer day. Second time I was assigned to 1st Marine Division, I was deployed to Iraq in 2006 for 1 year. So that was an exciting time, interesting time.
Do you think, given your position at the time, do you think we should have gone into Iraq or just left it alone? You didn't sign that NDA, remember?
No. And that's where I was quickly going through the mind check.
Oh, not the NDA.
He's thinking, wait a minute. This is
my personal opinion, not a official Navy stance of any kind.
Very good. Yes. Thank you. Good cover.
No, we should not.
Yeah.
It was not the right time. It was not for the right reasons.
Yeah.
The WMD issue, I can't discuss, but I think it was stable enough. We had a counterpoint to Iran, and the region was pretty much stable. Why we really went in, I have a personal opinion, which I won't state. But
I mean, because his dad couldn't do it, he did. that story.
Actually,
Daddy could have. And that's a totally different story.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a time to have taken down Saddam Hussein, it was when George H. Bush was president. That was the time to do it. And there was legitimate cause. There was a unified coalition. All the elements was there to remove him at that point in time.
Yeah.
The years later, I don't think those same factors were in play.
Right.
I mean, Afghanistan was a must. We responded. That's where the dude was, Osama bin Laden. Sadly, the way we did our rules of engagement, our area of operations, AOO, he was able to slip out to a safe country while we were just embroiled there. But I don't think we needed to expand to Iraq, though.
Yeah. It just seems like attacking Iraq and taking out the Republican Guard let loose the elements like the Taliban and things, you know, they seems like they controlled that area. The Republican Guard did.
Well, that's a different question than the one you asked. I would have done it differently. All you had to do was take the top 10% of the country's leaders and eliminate them and keep the rest in force.
Yeah.
Then, and I disagree with this, saying we weren't there occupying. We were occupying the country.
Right.
Anybody with any sense would say, but you have all these forces there. How are you not occupying? But when I was there in 2006, I oversaw training teams to train a new Iraqi army in the Al-Anbar province. I was one of the officers in charge of watching and training and working with the teams and the Iraqis on building a new army. And I don't know what our leaders were thinking, because the last group they wanted to develop were the non-commissioned officers. They wanted the top officers and all the grunts, but no NCOs. It's like, dude.
They're the boots on the ground. Now, we don't involve them. They, you know, we don't need, you know.
Yeah, and they were at first of taking any of the NCOs from the old Iraqi army and put them back in. And it's like, but they were also British trained. So I think the execution of the occupation went way wrong. We could have been in and out a lot sooner if we had just eliminated the top 10%, kept the structure there. I mean, we destroyed their entire infrastructure and we went to rebuild it.
Yep.
And then to be told by the Secretary of Defense, we'll be in and out of Iraq in 3 to 5 years.
Right.
You know nothing what it takes to build a country, especially if you decimate it to that level.
Yeah.
Do you think our relationship, the government's relationship with the weapons contractors, kind of makes it seem like we extend wars and get involved in wars that we shouldn't be? You know what I'm saying? The graft that is, I should say graft, the assumed graft in the government, like, you know, Senator, well, the, without well, trying dirtying anybody.
You should have seen the letter I wrote to my senator.
It says it all right there.
I'd love to see
I do think we need a major overhaul and restructuring of the military industrial complex and the U.S. military. Right. I take to heart President Eisenhower's warning about the MIC.
Right.
And I've seen enough in my career that solidifies that thinking in my mind.
Yeah.
And I don't think people will tell me I'm wrong. You're discounting inflation. You're discounting this or that. $1 trillion going to the military and the CIA is not necessary to have a combat ready and a combat effective military force.
Well, there's no oversight either. Where is that money going? I mean, this is where we pay attention. We're not involved, but we pay attention to, you know, the senatorial with Burchett and Luna and all that. Are you paying attention to any of that? guys?
Well, Representative Burchett being the House.
He's your guy. Is he your guy?
Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
He
hell yeah.
Right.
He's my guy, too.
He looks at the UAP issue more, and his big focus on that is where's that money going? We're spending all this money.
Yep.
Yeah.
But where does it actually go?
Yep.
At first, I thought he was a bit of a kook looking at UAPs. So he really clarified, I don't care about UAPs and whether or not they're real or not.
It's about money.
I want to know where money is going. Yep. And I'm like, okay, now I can get on board with your committee.
Yeah. Are they trying to get him out? Is like Mike Turner's after him, it seems like, because he's messing up his
game plan.
Revenue stream.
Yeah.
Well, that may be. But so far, I don't think he's in danger of losing his seat.
Good. Oh, good. I'm happy. Yeah, but it's in the UFO community, that's always a big thing. Yeah, they're going to get him out of there because he's trying to discover, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Yeah, you're okay. One of my boys came.
Oh, what kind of dog you got? Or dogs?
Akita.
Nice. Oh, you got these are mean, aren't they?
No. They can be. Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking about you now.
He's like Debbie. My dog's like, that's her kid.
Yeah, your baby.
That German Shepherd, Max.
But no, to your question, $850 million was lost by the Defense Logistics Agency. Now, in the military, because it doesn't have a B, it has an M.
Right.
They don't care.
Right.
Yeah.
But even I in the military as a taxpayer, because my pay, which comes from taxpayers, is also taxed.
Right. Yeah.
I care about $1 million.
Yeah.
And where it goes. Yeah. You know, and the way they would try and deal with our travel. Oh, we got to save money. We cut your travel.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And we cut your per diem. Well, wait a minute. You lost $850 million. Right. What do you care about $150 on a plane ticket?
Right.
Well, they can't pay those millions unless they cut your $150.
Yeah. Yeah.
that goes away from their bonus.
That's the accounting. That's the bean counter.
That's their bonus.
Right. And also, come to find out, there's a different law about military contracts and military construction.
Yeah.
Okay, we're throwing money
at
people, but what are we getting for it?
Right.
And do we really have a combat ready and, I stress the and, combat effective military force?
Right.
You know, China is not scared of us.
No.
Look at what they're doing around Taiwan. Russia's not scared of us. They attacked Ukraine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that war, which in my opinion could have been a quick war, has now been going on how long, with more money being pumped in.
Yep.
And yeah, I do want an independent Ukraine, not under Russian rule. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And then we're nickel and diming Israel to death.
Yeah.
And that's odd. So to get to a military like an SESG Explorer, I think we have to do a major overhaul
right.
of the military.
Right.
And that includes the military industrial complex. Because if you look at our current military structure, it was formed not by the president, because you'll say, but the president's commander in chief, yeah. when I make this next line.
Temporary.
The military really works for Congress.
Yeah.
Both House of Senators and House of Representatives. And it was the Congress that wrote the law in 1947 that created the modern military.
Yeah.
And since then, they've only passed what I call Band-Aid solutions in the NDAA that, for instance, created Space Force. But I think they got that totally wrong,
yeah.
that they went on the cheap and just consolidated satellites and missiles to the Air Force, because Space Force is a subsurface underneath
right.
the U.S. Air Force, which I don't believe, and I'm trying to mind read people in the White House at the time in the Congress.
Yeah.
That was the intent.
Mm-hmm.
Of Space Force. Space Force was getting us ready for the next domain of war fighting, real space battles, which
right.
the Air Force, in my opinion, cannot do it alone. It has to involve the Navy and Marines.
Right.
And if we really are going to the moon, you're going to see elements of the Army there as well.
Yeah.
So I think we totally blew Space Force. Because the Space Force and SESG builds a fleet.
Right.
Yeah.
And people have said, well, where did they get the money to build a fleet? Have you not looked at the UAP, where money's going there?
Or right. Any-
yeah.
right. A lot of it,
money
too.
Is flowing in places yep. you don't have a clue. Who yep. says yep. they can't go and build a fleet?
That's true.
You know. So... hopefully that answered that question.
It was a long way around the barn, but we got it. I don't know. Are you a... I'm going to ask the big question. And we're not a political show
that's
at all.
That's the big question.
I was surprised, Matt, with some of the things like that. Are you a Trump supporter? And, it's okay to go on international podcasts and answer that.
No, no. It's, when you conserve the two choices right now.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Up over the other guy.
Good answer.
If you gave me somebody else, and I don't know if RFK Jr. is really the guy.
I was right. just going to say that. Do you, I'm kind of looking at him, but I don't think he's going to be able to make it. You know what I mean? It's just going to detract from everything else.
Well, the royal family of the Kennedys have come out against him.
Yeah.
Right.
And the royal family of Kennedys, as I call them nowadays, are lockstep with the DNC, and the DNC has locked them out.
Right.
Yeah.
So when was the last time we had a non-Republican or Democrat really stand up and take anything? I mean, Ross Perot was Republican and then went independent and split the Republican vote.
Yeah.
And Clinton slid right in.
Right.
Yep.
So
yeah,
they're don't. Really working hard to keep RFK Jr. from splitting the Democrat
right.
vote.
Right.
So
it's just an interesting, dynamic this year. It just feels like insanity. But if I'm an extraterrestrial overlooking, and I have any kind of intelligence, and I look at what goes on in the geopolitical arena, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with this. It's like warring ants in Africa attacking each other. That's how we look at it, you know?
You know, if I was going to invade Earth, I'd probably just sit back and watch and wait.
Let it right. wait for it to happen. Right. No, it's only a matter of time.
Why waste my resources when you're going to give me a planet of resources?
They're going to destroy themselves. Let's just watch.
We can't help it.
Get some popcorn.
Yeah, indeed. The only thing is there anything good about humanity that I might want to save? And how can I do it without getting my paws dirty?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I had to ask.
You know, dinosaurs, so, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sadly, though, the premise in SCSG Explorer is the aliens are out to conquer.
Right.
Well, tell us about the book. I don't want to give up everything because we want people to read it. So tell us how you came about the concept.
That's a long way around the barn. No, I started reading sci-fi as a kid and found 1950s and 1960 novels, which were not super high-tech stuff. It was people in different environments, you know, be it in outer space on ships or an alien world, and they have to survive. There's things that occur, obviously, and there's trauma, obviously, in that. So I got interested in writing a long, long time ago in college. I actually wrote an outline to a bunch of research. I started writing a novel, but then studies took over. I needed to make the grade. So that story was shelved. And then career took over. And in 2006, while I was deployed in Iraq, on my downtime, I just started writing, and SCSG Explorer came out, The Imagination. The main character, Kevin Brannigan, was based off of different admirals that I had encountered, especially at Seventh Fleet and before. So, and since I was with the Marines on a MEU, Marine Expeditionary Unit, on board Navy ships, it was really Navy Marine Corps centric. Being an expeditionary strike group, that was a capability developed in early 2000, going out into deep space. But why would we go into deep space? And the premise was we stumbled across a message from deep space wanting an invite, basically send us a message so we can meet you, is what it in essence said. Oh, by the way, here's some technology that you might be interested in.
Right.
But humans being paranoid the way we are, we decided, no, we're going to send a fleet of ships out to meet you. And want to tell the tale of them traveling to meet the Comorgans. That's the species that sent the message.
Right.
And the goal was a diplomat and trade relationship with the Comorgans, which kind of was what the message might indicate. And the admiral and the ambassador that travel with them discovered that's not what the Comorgans want. So it became a fight of survival for the admiral and his fleet to, and general order number one, never let the location of Earth be known.
Right.
And so he had to be willing to kill or destroy his entire fleet to keep that order complete. Wow. Never let Earth out.
Right. Wow.
So we got border, and in fact, in at the end of the book, they discover a new border control point, an entry point to Earth, and it was a planet that they had discovered.
Right.
So by the time they're returning, Earth had developed some more of a fleet and colonized a planet that they had discovered, and that leads to the next book, Minerva.
Nice. So, that sounds great.
And the editing of Minerva.
Yeah.
How does that
process?
Yeah, that process is kind of interesting to me. I never wrote, I might write a book one day. How do you, okay, you did all your, how does book writing drafts go? You write everything out. Does all of the punctuation, does that, I mean, do they fix all that? And how does the editing go when you do that?
Well,
another loaded question.
So you have your traditional house publishing, which you have to have an agent, and the agent gets editors and help you get to a finished product. And then they tried to get the traditional houses like Penguin to publish you. Then there's the other side, total independent self-publishing, where it's all up to the author, everything. Artists, editing, distribution, sales. I went hybrid. So a lot of the distribution, sales, printing, all that goes on the publisher. So I write the story. I do one or two rounds of editing myself.
Right.
Wow. And then the publisher who agrees to take on the work, this particular publishing house will do 9 rounds of edits.
Wow.
That will include the storyline, making sure it's sequenced properly. That includes proofreading, punctuation stuff, and then the copy pages. How will it really look like when it comes out printed? And I sent them a concept, 3 concepts of the book cover that I would like explored. So when that comes back, I have options, say, yeah, that looks good, or that one doesn't. And I want to work with the publisher, and so I have an idea of what I want to do with that, but I need their concurrence, because if it works out, I might put it on my website, ChristopherLorick.com,
right,
to get feedback from other people, which cover design they might like. But I don't know if I'm actually allowed to do that with the publisher. I need to talk to them first.
Right.
Is one's a one cover design is a massive space battle. One is a Earthship. The USS Diplomatic is coming to the aid of another species against the Comorians. And then one is just an asteroid scene of a ship going into a base. So, you know, which one will be, you know, most appealing or
eye-catching?
Yeah. Yes. Well, and I'm sure you, the cover here,
right,
SCSP, very nice, shows the space battle I over Comorica.
Like that. That's cool.
And that's actually the opening paragraph of the book is what's on the cover.
Right.
So.
You retain rights to, you said you came up with all these three. You retain the rights to those or these shows?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the copyright stays with the author.
Nice. Good.
If I went with traditional house.
Right.
All the copyright goes to the traditional house.
Right.
So anything dealing with the books, if things fall out of the sky just right and perfect, lightning strikes correctly.
Right.
Let's say somebody wants to do a movie short or a movie. Yeah. The publisher has sent them to me, and I'm the one that works with them on that.
Right.
So I decide whether they can do it and how I do the negotiating, what then controls would I have on that production and royalties.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. It is about storytelling, but I kind of like to pay bills.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I do like to eat.
It's time is money, you know, right? Yeah.
Right. And we found you through a PR firm. Is that, how does that work? How do they come into play?
Well, you know, what's really interesting is I'm a Navy guy turned novelist with no knowledge of the writing world.
Right.
And I learned a little bit, because I did some research about how you get published. And that's where I discovered different publishing houses and what they offer. Where in some publishing houses, I had to do everything, then give them the work, and they would try and distribute it.
Right.
And they did the printing. I'm like, well, I might as well be totally independent.
Yeah.
Others offered some services. Dorn's Publishing had a package, but they just did a package. And every now and then I'll get emails of different shows that the work can be not demonstrated. made available. So I sent the book to Frankfurt, Germany to a show, which no authors were allowed there. It was just people's bodies of work, like on the shelf or whatever.
Right.
And Mr. Brian Feinblum picked up my book and said, "This looks interesting." Yeah, I glanced through it and all that and contacted me, and we started doing some publicizing of it. So
nice.
Part of it is I could have went out looking for a publicist, but I didn't know that side of the marketing or marketing side of the publishing world. So right. You have editors, you have publishing houses with editors, yeah. And you have a slew of marketers out there as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do I fit into this? And while I've learned a lot, I still have to do book events. Like on July 12 through 14, I'll be at the Knoxville Convention Center at the Fanboy Comic Con.
Nice.
With the stand to sell the book. And hopefully by then I have some good timelines on Minerva so I can start advertising that.
Cool.
The 27th of this month, I'll be at the Jellicoe Library here in town. It's a small town, but still, yeah. Jellicoe Library to do a book signing event there.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very nice.
So, yeah.
Go on out there, people.
Yeah, please. And I actually enjoy speaking with the people that come out to do this. Get some interesting insights and thoughts about, you know, what people see or think about the genre or even about UAPs.
Yeah.
You know?
Are you a believer? I mean, you haven't seen anything. Are you I'm assuming you're a believer that something's out there. The Tic Tac. I'm so sick of hearing about the TikTok.
Really?
you know, and the Fravor and the, you know, I mean, and then they say, yeah, it's a flying Volkswagen or whatever it was. You know.
Personally, I would like there to be something out there.
That's what we think.
Everybody
yeah. Like whether or not I buy into all the evidence, I'm skeptic.
Right.
I'm skeptical. And while people have real experiences, you know, I can't invalidate that. I have no data. I can't say yes or no. So I don't discount them because it's possibly very real.
Right.
I don't know if you heard about a man named Frank Drake. How in 1961, the question is, are we alone or something out there?
Drake equation.
He created the Drake equation. Yeah. And there's certain assumptions under that equation. And in June of 2020, I'm looking at my notes, Professor Consolese at the University of Nottingham, they used his equation and came up with an estimation of something like 33 or so civilizations, possible civilizations.
Yeah.
But one of the issues that they kept saying and talking about is the fast distances.
Yeah.
How could they cross the distances? And as a Christian, I do subscribe to angels and demons. Well, they're an interdimensional being.
Right.
So are we talking interdimensional beings, or are we talking about a civilization that has discovered how to travel interdimensionally?
Right.
So I leave the door open. I won't say, no, there isn't.
Right.
But there very well could be.
In your book, what's the propulsion method that your craft use without divulging any secrets?
Well, it's fusion power. It's nuclear power, but it's a hyperspace drive. And hyperspace is still pure theoretical. And I don't even think the astrophysicists have hyperspace worked out.
Right.
I think there's a lot of different theories coming out of that realm. And I think they're starting to question even our basic theory of relativity. As theory of relativity, from my understanding, doesn't allow you to cross this light speed barrier. you get very close to it and time changes on you.
Right.
That's where quantum physics may be the answer, but it may even blow that out to do real hyperspace. Me being a operations planning guy, not an engineer, that's it. That's my limit. So
yeah,
that
management.
It's the hyperspace drive. There you go.
You guys do that. I'm just the, you know,
I'm just a,
the 10,000 foot guy.
I'm the worker bee.
Yeah, my last 15 years, I was definitely, you could say, management. I oversaw a lot of operations.
Right.
So my NATO command, I was going to run an operation if we got the resources. But President Trump shifted the money to carrier exercise vice, the experiment we were running,
right,
which is okay. But yeah, no, obviously it's nuclear. They're dealing with reactors, but then they come across crystal technology that has stored energy. And Dr. Jack Vance, another main character in the book, his team of scientists figure out, hey, we can tap into this and how. Sadly, the Admiral was starting a mission set and the doctor calls him up, Admiral, we got it. We can do this. He's like, Doc, shit, enough. I'll talk to you later. We're in something.
We're busy.
People could die if I start listening to you. So, but yeah, that's the propulsion is totally theoretical, just like we've done since the 60s with hyperspace or warp speed or anything along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't use the Star Wars hyperspace or the Battlestar Galactica FTL, FTL being instant jump.
Right.
They travel through hyperspace, sometimes months at a time.
Right.
So, you know, you're going from, okay, I've encountered a planet, we've had issues with the planet, time to leave, they enter hyperspace, and I describe only a little bit about what that's like being, you know, when you're on the ship at sea, traveling from port to port, you get into a routine.
Right.
Wake up, you eat, work, you eat, you go to bed, you shower in there, you do some physical activity, maybe. In there,
right.
Space is limited on a ship, but there's a routine, and that's what they're doing in hyperspace. And then they come out, and sometimes there's nothing there.
Yeah.
Sometimes they encounter a space station and have to figure out what this is, and can we communicate with them, and what can we get from them?
Right.
Is it? Do they do suspended animation since they're months out, or do they just
no I didn't go the route of suspended animation. I kept them, you know, the science stations,
gravity,
they're busy checking out the gravity well, what right. that really looks like.
Right.
They have a communication issue. They can, among the seven ships, they can communicate, but not very well when they're in hyperspace. And then they actually encounter a problem in hyperspace after they leave Camorga. They run into a major problem. And they're like, oh, how are we going to solve this?
Right.
Well, we're on the fly. Yeah. So they start going through different scenarios and they come up with a plan on how to solve their problem.
Nice.
And they execute that plan. So
that's awesome.
Very nice. Can they travel from ship to ship? Do they have like pods or anything, or they just communicate via radio or whatever?
When they're in hyperspace, they can only somewhat talk to each other.
Right.
But when they're in normal space, they have fighter craft, recon craft, transport, drop ships. You know,
very cool.
All the fun stuff.
I created the 51st Marine Expeditionary Unit.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Space and version. They have tanks they can drop from their landing craft. May I call it landing craft? The USS Chesty is the Marine Corps' base or starship that they work off of. and they can drop tanks onto a planet. And
wow. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. And there's a whole formation when they encounter some pirates on a planet and their recon team comes under fire. They have to maneuver the ships in a way that the Chesty can angle in to drop the Marines onto right. the planet.
Nice. So,
I totally see this as a video game.
Yeah.
Wow. You could do that.
Right. Sure. Right.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Right. And he's even though it's Space Expeditionary Strike Group, it has a carrier strike group element to it as well.
Right.
Because they're out in deep space, so it is all Marine centric.
Right. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So. How long were you in the Navy, Christopher? Did you do
28 years.
Wow.
Yeah. By law, I could only do 30, but I would have had to be promoted to captain to reach 30.
Right.
And to go beyond that, you have to then be an admiral or general.
Right.
So, yeah.
How long did it take to write the book?
Well, it took me the full year in Iraq, but then it got shelved because when I came back, there was a tremendous amount of work that had to be done at 1st Marine Division.
Right.
We had, besides deploying forces constantly to Iraq and Afghanistan, and we actually, 1st Marine Division went back into Afghanistan my last year with them. That was a lot of work. So that, and then, where did I go? Oh, I went to South Korea, to U.S. Forces Korea after that.
Real quick, what were we trying? What were, was that this question? What were we trying to accomplish in Afghanistan? Yeah, I'm a little curious.
Just went political.
I mean, it didn't work for the Russians. And, you know,
whatever it was they were trying we took to do. I think we took a different tack from the Russians. They really wanted to control the country. And mind you, the reason why you want Afghanistan, if you're Russia, right next door is Iran.
Right.
And all the oil fields of Iran. So that was, for the U.S. in the 50s, 60s, that was a major area of concern for us. And Russia wanted it in order to get to Iran. And the British Empire saw that. And Russia saw it. It's why, in a lot of ways, Afghanistan was created as a no man's land during the British Empire and Russian Empire to keep something between them.
Yeah,
I've heard that before.
Obviously, we were after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. But after that, we really did not want a chaotic situation or an extremist government to create more terrorists.
Right.
Yeah. So with, what, about 2,500 people, we were able to help that country allow freedoms to come to especially women and children,
right.
Education, all of that. I mean, for a small group of people, we were able to help really a large diverse, very diverse population,
right?
And become Western again.
Yeah.
Because before the Russians steamrolled in there, they were a very Western-oriented country,
right?
With different civil liberties for their population. Then the Russians rolled in, then the Taliban changed. Took over.
Yep.
And you went to a far extremist on a religion note, very fanatical religious note. So I think our objectives constantly change, right. As they will change over time when you are in a war, then to sustain that, to nation building. And yeah, so depending on which part of the war you're talking about, or I don't even like to think we were actually at war in later. There was still combat actions, but we weren't really there in war. We were really more of a support group to a legitimate government, probably. Is it corrupt government? Probably.
Probably.
But girls could go to school and beyond the age of five and get an education.
Yeah, that's good.
Women were in the government.
Yeah.
You know, and now look at them. Yeah. They're right back to the way they were before coming in there.
Yeah.
So sad days.
Yeah.
But, I mean, didn't get the hearts and minds we needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the hearts and minds of where? Yeah. Which country are you talking about with hearts and minds on that one?
So we're always concerned about oil, you know. So when we, did we liberate Kuwait or what did we call that when we went down there?
No, I wouldn't say we, the first Gulf War.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could call it a liberation. Saddam Hussein had rolled in there and was occupying it.
Yeah.
And then in comes the coalition of forces and drove him out.
How come we can't just, thanks for the oil. We this is all the work we did. Now this is our oil.
Well, that's kind of.
Christopher's like, that's a very weird way.
Well,
to
no,
look at
I
that.
Mean, there's actually an SESG explorer. I kind of talk about that. There's a slave issue that comes up that they encounter.
Right.
And there was discussion, let's just take the station and liberate everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
And on the other side of the coin, it's like, okay. One, it's not our charter to do that. Right. Two, when we leave here, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah.
I'm not going to leave a ship or two behind.
Yeah.
And we need our stuff.
We're not gifted.
So, you know, that to me is a very relevant scenario in the book about what do we do?
Yeah.
You know, do we roll into Kuwait and then just sit there?
Right.
Well, we keep, in a way, we did.
Yeah.
How many Mew ARGs kept going back into the area?
Right.
How many carriers go into the area? We're there to ensure Kuwait stays liberated. Nobody rolls in there. But, you know, when you look at, do I really want to put a force on the ground and sustain them? Those are questions that I actually kind of talk about in SESG Explorer.
That's nice.
Cool.
It's like the book is set on kind of real life stories, but, you know, with your twist in it.
I really think it is. Yeah. I mean, when I first went to Seventh Fleet, it was, we're deep water only, deep blue water. We don't do littoral waters. We don't do any piracy.
Right.
And then 9/11 happened and our mission sets changed drastically.
Yep.
We started doing what we call brown water activity or littoral engagements, where we went after pirates. We started protecting the shipping lanes more than what we had before. Most valuable ships, as we started calling them, if we saw a commercial ship with a lot of highly important materials, we actually would put troops on those ships. That's and awesome. We would cruise destroyers up and down any strait that a pirate could come out of and try and get the ship. So, and Minerva will delve more into the anti-piracy issues than Explorer did. SESG Explorer was, find out what's out here on our way to meet the Comorgans.
Right.
Very cool.
Heck yeah.
What year is this set in? Is Explorer set in?
SESG Explorer starts off in 2041. Okay. Well, the first chapter with the Admiral being selected to command is 2040. But I chose near future. Not far out future.
Right.
Is outside of the hyperspace drive, it may be the shielding, all the technology we can actually accomplish today.
Right.
You know, there's nothing really beyond what we can do today that's in the book. And I wanted to keep it more in that lane. And I wanted the aliens to have what we call near peer competitors. Near peer technology,
right?
So that way, it takes some maneuvering and tactics to actually overcome each other. You just can't go in and in a matter of seconds or minutes sap all your own
support. Right. A little even playing field.
Right. And that way, when I describe some of the battles going on, there's maneuver going on. When they engage one of the space stations they encounter, you have fighter pilots having to do some things to get through the station shields.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Awesome.
That's in the book.
I like it.
Yeah. Got to read the book.
Yep. Get the book.
Yes, please.
SESG Explorer.
How long has it been out? How long has SESG Explorer been out,
Chris? It hit the market first in March of 2021. No, delay that. This is 2024, March of 2023.
We try to forget about 21. I started
the book again in March, December of 2021. I reattacked the book because Space Force had been created by then.
Right.
It being a near future book, I needed to update it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I included more Air Force and Army in the book than it previously was.
Nice.
And so now you have a new chief of, well, we call him Chief of Operations Space Force, but he's around the table with the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
But Kirk has refused, called it captivating, and that the book draws you in. Bluey called it captivating read with engaging characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Major General Paul Connington, the Deputy Commander, Admiral Vice Admiral Kevin Brannigan, they had their dialogue. Colonel Cole, the CAG, Air Force turned Space Force, and he's the Carrier Air Commander or Group Commander, the guy in charge of all the fighter pilots. He's questioning what the heck's going on, and has been told that he could have been sacked as well as everyone else at the beginning of the book. He's like, what? My job was on the line? He didn't realize his own career was about to end at the beginning of the book.
That's funny.
Wow. So it's
the
good
first commander of the SESG was relieved for cause.
Oh, is that usual kind of naval thing where they remove the commander, and I forget what they call it. They don't even call it performance. They said lack of confidence.
That's the general term
for
the public. Nice, and for the rest of the service, those involved actually know why they were relieved.
Right.
Pause.
It's like the guy that was in command of the submarine who it ran aground. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. We've had one bounce off of an undersea mountain.
Oh,
I think that was that one.
Oh.
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't running aground. It hit the mountain, undersea mountain.
And then
it wasn't my fault. It was the navigator or whatever.
Well,
the answer to you.
We have lost confidence in your ability to
command. That's a nice way of saying get the F out of here.
Yeah, don't forget about the submarine that did the emergency blow as a demonstration for, I believe it was some congressional members.
Right. Oh, no.
And they sunk a Japanese fishing boat.
Oh!
Which the commander of the submarine actually learned a lot about the Japanese culture.
Right.
And he went to each of the family members of that boat and did a personal apology to each one of them.
Wow,
and
that's classy.
The Japanese methodologies.
Wow.
So that was a big plus on him.
Yeah.
Even though
yeah.
it didn't matter.
The tragic situation occurred, he went and made personal amends.
Yeah.
That's good.
That's important.
That's really good.
So, but a lot of the book is drawn off of my military experience and
sounds
people
amazing.
I've interacted with.
Buy the book, folks.
Buy the book.
That's right.
SESG Explorer by Christopher Lorick. Christopher, right, we're going to wrap it up.
Does he have any websites or something?
It's
ChristopherLorick.com. And if you go there, you'll find links to your favorite online bookstore to also be able to purchase the book.
Perfect.
And I'll be, when I get, hopefully next week, I'll get an update from my publisher on the next book, and I'll update the website on that too.
Awesome. Do you do you tend your MUFON? You have I'm sure you have a mutual UFO network group that meets around your area somewhere. Do you know?
There really isn't one. There's the Knoxville Writers Guild, which I belong to, and oh, there's another guild that I'll probably be joining as well. That's
good.
More in the genre of science fiction and fantasy. So.
Well, we're members of MUFON. In fact, right after this, we're running off to our MUFON meeting. It's kind of like AA for UFO junkies. authors will come in. Anthony Sanchez, he's a writer about the phenomena, yeah. UFO phenomena, Dolce, yeah, and that kind of thing. But he comes in and, talks about his books and things and sells them there. So if you ever run across MUFON, they fully support the science fiction author community. Yeah. So I would urge you to do that.
All right.
And it's been great having you on. And I really appreciate you coming on.
Nice meeting you.
You know, it was nice meeting you. I hope it was okay experience for you. We're not very professional, but we pride ourselves on that.
No, yeah. I appreciate the time and the effort and actually the fun conversation.
Yeah. Awesome. We generally, people are like, oh, that wasn't as painful as I thought it would be.
They don't say that.
And, all right, we'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of the Alien Probe Podcast. We welcome questions, comments, or requests to alienprobepodcast@gmail.com. Visit us on Facebook. Check out our website at alienprobe.net. Twitter and Instagram at alienprobepod. YouTube, like and subscribe, and especially Rumble, because if you listen to us on Rumble, they won't give us a banner for discussing COVID.
Oh.
So, Christopher, thank you very much.
Thank
it's
so
been
much.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a good day, sir.
You too.